This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Tom Easton, the business India business editor for The Economist magazine, reporting on Tata. Tata Motors is one way you think of it. Tata everything. But Tata is now about to explore building out what we understand to be the high end of manufacturing. Long been the question with China's dominance in the supply chain and in manufacturing and electronics and my cell phone that I'm looking at, my Apple phone here. Why China? Why not India? Well, here's the answer. Chandra, Mr. Chandra, commanding Tata. Tom, I think I took a list here in your reporting of what Tata is now investing in and building. It's a long list, but it's dominated by IT and energy. Is that considered a risk to build the stuff that we buy in the United States, Tom?
Well, they've always had this huge IT operations, this back office, Tata Consulting Services. So that has grown over decades, and it's the most important in the world. So that is an obvious area for investment. Energy, India has tremendous energy needs. Tata Power goes back to the beginning of the 19th century as well. So they've augmented that, and they've managed to create a certain amount of synergy with their other operations. Where do you see that? They introduced a new electric car in the beginning of 2020, and it's the hottest car in India. And in part, it's been viable because their power operations have been putting in charging stations throughout the major cities. So, you know, is it a risk? Yes. But it is a calculated and probably a good risk? Yes. But I wanted, if you didn't mind for 1 second, to talk about the development of this high-end manufacturing in India versus China. I was a correspondent in China when many of the factories arose in the Pearl River Delta. And what you would see in China is just this chaotic rush to create factories. You didn't know who all the producers were. And then you would see the government put in highways, and all of a sudden there'd be a factory on the other side. Many of them didn't pay taxes until they went public. You know, the deals were created over, I remember going on New Year's Eve when it was below zero somewhere to see a government official seal a deal over tea. And, you know, within weeks there was another factory. It was a very chaotic scene, but it was very quick, and it ultimately became very effective. You can't move quite that quickly in India. But you have now been able to move quicker than you ever could before. So in Tata's case, they have a major 500-acre manufacturing facility that has arisen in Tamil Nadu, a southern state, that makes cell phone components, but also is going to make maybe chips and other things. That went from an idea in April of 2020, I believe, to a spade in the ground in September of 2020. That never happened in India before. It happened because, you know, Tata is quite capable, because Chandra is quite decisive, because the government of the state and the central government wanted this to happen. Many, many things have come together to allow this sort of thing to go on. So there's development that's going on in India. It's not going on in quite the same way as it went in China, but it is promising, and the world wants to see it work. And that's a very important factor.
The second risk that Tata is taking is the consumer, the India consumer, which strikes me as a fertile ground, given that there's more than a billion and growing. Super app called NEU, do they have a measure of its monetizing yet? Are they regarding it as successful?
Yeah, their super app. I would put all those apps in a category that you can't really judge for the next year, 2 years, 3 years. You know, they're trying to pull together. Tata produces everything, so they now have an airline, they have international car company, a domestic car company. They have the largest hotel company in India. They have a consumer company that puts together salt and all other sorts of spices. They have the local franchise for Starbucks. They have all of these. They are the leading seller of gold and all the wedding jewelry. And believe me, in India, wedding jewelry is incredibly important. I mean, this is a vast industry. They have the largest jewelry store, the biggest ownership stake, private ownership stake in the largest jewelry store. And they want to bring that all together through a consumer app. It's just been introduced. It's going to take a while before that particular effort shows any promise or not. But you know what? I think even if the app fails, all of those individual components are likely to succeed.
Now, the big story, working with the government or because the government is stepping back, Mr. Modi, very popular. It looks, according, I'm following your reporting, to be obliging. But what are the risks of dealing with the government still in India?
Yeah, so there are a lot of risks. I would say that Modi's reputation outside of India is very mixed. A lot of reporters in particular can't stand him. They disagree with his politics. I'm really going to focus on his economic policy. He was very successful when he was a governor or the equivalent of a governor in Gujarat, a northwestern state, where Mr. Ambani and Mr. Adani came from. And in his first 5 years of office, and when I arrived in India, I don't think his economic plans were very effective. There may have been one or two different taxation systems, but they did not manifest itself, I thought, in a positive growth program. His second tenure that began shortly before the onset of COVID has been quite different. It started slowly, but now it is very, very focused, and I think it is very, very effective for India. But what happens when you have a very unusual political administration, albeit a popular one, that is driving an economic program? You know, the administration can always change. And if you're dependent on a prime minister to really be that important, there's always going to be future risk. He can show favors that may be withdrawn, and one day he won't be in power as well. The question is the economic changes really embedded in the system, or is it peculiar to the administration? And many countries are going through this. America is going through this now when it went to, in my mind, a non-growth administration that exists now. China is going through its own issues with Xi Jinping. You know, India has a pro-growth administration, but there's nothing that says, and it's a very popular administration, but there's nothing that says it will last forever. And because it depends on, the government really being very forceful in its interventions, it's quite possible that it will return to earlier eras, which were ineffectual and produced very little growth for the country, and left it being quite a poor place. Even though in aggregate, its economy, and I think people in India are very proud about this. You know, in the past week, I think one of the major international stories, of course, has been the death of Queen Elizabeth. But in India, what resonated far more, I think, with the people than the death of the queen of the country that was their former colonial overseer was the fact that India itself is now a bigger economy than Britain. I mean, that was hugely meaningful for the Indians. But, the population is seven times as large. So on a per capita basis, it's still quite small. It's still quite poor. And, it raises, and it's a very, very difficult place still to get things done.
Tom, we just have 30 seconds. Yeah. What is a timeline for when Tata will know that these gambles are paying off? We have 30 seconds.
Yeah, so I think you have found every quarter tremendous improvement in Tata, and you can see it in the numbers. There is no timeline going forward that you really have to look at. It has been a remarkable turnaround, and its market cap has more than doubled. But I think in the quarters to come, you will see that too. This is not to, maybe their app you'll have to look at in years to come, but all the other changes you will see on a quarterly basis.